I think challenging for the whole university, challenging for the counseling center providing the services that we have just grown accustomed to doing as efficiently and proficiently as we can. And also personally challenging. I realize I am really, if I ever had any questions about whether I wanted to leave my job or retire and then go and do just telehealth all the time, it is not my cup of tea. It is not a good way for me to do what I do. And that's been a real eye-opener for me. So, you know, I know the focus is going to be about specifically how we can support students. I don't know what's going to happen in the fall. It's more than likely that we're probably still going to be on remote learning and remote access only, crossing fingers, hoping the Oxford group comes up with a vaccine and we're all like doing fine. But I hope we as a human race have learned about this and how to better care for the world and our own lives and humanity in general. So I think what I have noticed, and I've talked with Steve about this a lot, and the client and the students that continue to see me as clients with telecounseling, is that it's really interesting and kind of ironic for this generation of students who really preferred to communicate online by text, can barely even talk on the phone. That's too intimate somehow. And then personal, person-to-person contact is so often limited or taken for granted or whatever. And now they're saying, oh my goodness, I really would like to see my friends. I would like to actually be next to them, talk to them in person. I don't want to just text them all the time. I don't want to do, FaceTime and things like that. And so one of the things, I know that everything we have been talking about and being drilled into has been about retention and how in the world are we going to retain students and survive this period. And what I have realized is all the ways of connecting with students we have done automatically, and we've just sort of done it, without a whole lot of thought. It's the circumstance that we're in. They come to class, they're in front of us, they look at each other, they look at us, we look at them, we communicate, things like that. And now communication is like this precious little thin, fragile thread that connects all of us. And my perspective in Maui, and Joseph, Lisa, if you can contribute to this as well, is how many of my students have said that they really miss being in class. And how many students have said, if I wanted to do online learning, I could have signed up for a different university and it would have been cheaper. I wouldn't get all the things that I wanted. I want clubs, I want classes, I want discussion, I want connection, I want meetings with my professors, with my advisors, things like that. And so any line of communication that we have is kind of, we just need to be very deliberate and we need to be conscientious about. And this is personal feedback, anecdotal only, with my client SKU population. How many of them have said that they wish their professors had Zoom classes, that they really would like to see their classmates, they really would like to have a conversation like what we're doing in the moment of their learning versus just reading things, just seeing things on PowerPoint, writing reactions, and then submitting that, and that being their work of being in the class. And I said this to my husband, Steve Adams, who's the chair of the English department, who has been Zooming with his students, which I have been applauding with him, you know, him for doing that and how important that has been. Also, any kind of personal, individual communication with students is highly valued. Not a email blast, but a, hi, Joseph, just wanted to check in with you, see how you're doing. I just noticed that it's been a while since you've submitted any material. Do you need some assistance? That kind of thing. We as counseling center staff, ethically and kind of best practices have been taught in our programs and our training that we do not chase clients, that we really put the responsibility on clients to secure the services that they need. We have had to adjust that in this period. We have done much more chasing than we would have ever thought was right to do or a good thing to do. But it's because of these extraordinary circumstances that we've just had to bend how we do things. And I think as counselors, we bend. And I think as faculty, pedagogically, there needs to be some bending and some adjusting to deal with these kind of circumstances that we have. And certainly if we can't get anything out of this, certainly we could get something redemptive, which is to learn how to do things a new way. That would be great, right? We want to survive this process and then we want to move on and we want to have learned from what we experienced. So that's what I wanted to tell everybody.
I'd like to just add to something you said, Susanna, about like checking in. And I think that's so important. I think checking in with the students without a goal in mind, the only goal for me, I feel like, is reaching out to students, just checking in, seeing how they are. Not like, hey, how are you doing? But have you completed this? Or I haven't, you know, just really just asking about them and making them feel like, gee, this person really cares about where I've been, what I've been doing, how's my routine, things of that sort. So I think that should be enforced with a lot of the faculty and staff to try and reach out to people for that reason alone.
I think the other thing I would chime in that was crossing my mind when you were talking, Susanna, is so in my experience as a therapist, as a, you know, a counselor on campus, I had a full book and we, you know, have historically run a waiting list of people to get in to see a counselor. And I was doing some great work with some of our students who were coming every week or every other week on campus. And they've dropped off the map and I've sent individual emails. I've sent the email blast and then, you know, reached out even a second time to several of the ones who I was like, okay, we were doing, you know, pretty good stuff and good work. But when I have gotten a response and some response, sometimes I haven't gotten a response, but when I have, for those who, well, yeah, one of the responses I've gotten was just circumstantially, it's prohibitive. They have no place to go where they can speak privately, you know. And so I recommended you can go get in the car, you know, or you can, you know, if you're able to do that with your phone. But we don't know, you know. I'm fortunate, and I know with my colleagues, like we've talked about, sort of our individual circumstances. I can do whatever I want. I live in a house with plenty of internet access and. You know, I live alone and I'm not worried about anybody walking in to hear my conversations. Dristy, you know, has a 4-year-old who may or may not climb up in her lap at any given moment. You know, and we each have our different stories, but thinking about students, like they have less autonomy than we do. And I am well aware of some of their situations at home that are really not good. And, you know, they are holding up sometimes in their own room just to avoid a lot of the crisis that might be going on in the house. You know, sometimes it's not safe and there are all kinds of things. So we just don't know where they're coming from. So from a counseling perspective, that's one thing, but thinking of it, you know, from an education perspective as well, you know, are they able to get the space to do the work that you need them to do? And I know each class is different. And I'm sure people are offering opportunities, but yeah, I definitely agree that reaching out to one-on-one when you can, but then also just really bearing in mind, like, we don't know what their home situation is like, and what resources they have and what just space availability to do the work that we need them to do. And then also so many folks have created a life for themselves on campus. You know, they went away to college and they're experiencing this independence and this ability to live life in a new way. Like, that's what the college experience is about, and it's wonderful. And so I have several who are first or second years who are like, oh no, like I had created this identity for myself and these friends and this routine and this life of independence and some autonomy that just got ripped out from under me, and now I'm back home and I don't get to live that life I was really excited about living. So
So some of the other things that students have said is that they have talked about how their parents aren't social distancing the way they should. Some of them have no choice. They have to go to work. Some students have said there, if you're going to be home, you need to get a job in this period of time when they're not supposed to be leaving the house. Yeah. So what Joseph is saying is really true. I mean, it's like a whole, I don't know, almost unlimited a variety of circumstances at home that make this very challenging for them. Some of, I've had a student who said that she was taking an online test. She's a nursing student. She was taking an online exam and a Zoom exam or some, I'm not sure what it was, but that her mother kept interrupting her. And it's like, she had to say to her mother, I'm in class right now. You can't walk in the middle of an exam and bother me, you know? So, you know, I think families don't quite know what to make of their sons and daughters who are actually full-time students, but at home doing things remotely. You know, and so I think another thing that could be helpful, maybe Dristy, is if a document or something that can be sent by Academic Affairs actually to family members of what to expect when their sons and daughters are taking classes and what they need to provide. Private space that's quiet, door closed, people not interrupting. I mean, just sort of a tutorial on that, if you want to say. How to help your student be more successful.
Suzanne, I hear that, but I think honestly the parents and the families that would read and be informed by that are probably already doing that. Like some of the students that I work with, their families are like really not interested, you know, like and would be like, screw that, you know, I've got three other kids, or I've got like grandma who's living with us, and I'm not making space for you. Yeah, I don't know. I just, in some of the situations I've spoken with people, they're not in a very supportive environment at home. So I hear you, and I think in the perfect world, absolutely. But I don't know that, I like the idea, but I don't know how many people would really do that. One of the things that I am really trying to do and always try to do before this stuff is to empower these emerging adults to like be adults and to take responsibility and ask for what they need and advocate for themselves and things like that. So I guess that's also where, you know, back to my previous point of they are starting to do that, but now they're back, you know, in the household, and, you know, who knows, their parents might baby them or not give them the opportunity to do that. But I'd be curious, you know, if we had more professors online, and maybe, Lori, you know, maybe you all could speak to this, but many of our students are resistant and are saying, I never wanted to be an online student. Did you all want to be online professors, you know? Did you want to teach in this way? And I know a lot of people are resistant, but how are you adjusting?
Technically not a professor. I work in the library. Mostly here to kind of figure out how to support my student workers who couldn't come back to work, who are somewhat upset that, you know, their campus experience has been cut short, but you know, so we hear from them sometimes.
Thank you, Lori. I mean, I guess as a faculty, it is been a little overwhelming because we are being students. As we're being students to this, all of a sudden we had to go remote online online all of a sudden. So like we are students at the same time, which gives us perspective, but it's learning and teaching and being responsible for so many students that you cannot see. And you have to basically gauge what they're going through. Sometimes they're not even very, they don't say directly that they're in trouble. Some of them do say that. So you basically have to really pay extra attention. And then again, with distraction inside the house, I don't know how people do it. So like I said, just to get the space, everybody, and I guess that's the same situation with students. So it gives us perspective, but it has been a learning experience. Hopefully we come out of this. So my question is, I guess, I don't know what the future holds, right? So when a student is distressed and I am not being able to provide them, I mean, I really care for, I guess all the faculty really care for the students, but when we need to, we don't have the answers, instead of giving us something that, some answers we can give, but more than that, when we need to send them to you, are there ways of doing, how, so please educate us on how to send to you, there'll be a variety of problems. Are there problems that you anticipate, not just this week, it's going to be all about wrapping the semester. I think more people would need, will be more affected and worried and anxious about their exams and their last final papers and how they do the grades and jobs for seniors and all that, right? So this week is going to be issues related to this. But I think once we are after May, students will be students, I hope, for good. But after May, mid-May, there'll be new kinds of anxieties. There'll be new issues. So I had two questions. One is what are the channels that we can guide them to say, you know, you can do this, you can go to the counseling center, this is how you approach those. What are the resources? You have pet therapy, and what are some of those resources the counseling center has that we should know about? And the second question is, what do you anticipate would be newer issues in summer and maybe beginning of fall that we should be equipped with right now to know, so that we are not thinking about it in fall, in September, saying, oh, I never thought of that. So do you have, from your experience and expertise, do you have any such, if you'd like to tell the faculty anything, that this is how we can prepare, this is what we should expect in fall, and this is where students will have trouble, and this is how you can reach us, and this is what we're helping.
So Drusti, one of the ways that we're adjusting this is, there is actually going to be counseling available over the summer at a much limited version of what we're doing right now, because for instance, I'm a 10-month contract. I leave in the middle of June and I'm gone until the middle of August, but Maui and Joseph are, they're 11 months. And so they're going to be taking some vacation time, but they're going to be available over the summer. Julia and Brian as well. Lisa, our goddess who holds us all together. She's around also. And so any new individuals, any individuals, if they contact you over the summer for whatever reason, and Lori, also student workers, you know, if you've had a relationship with them, they're going to contact you. And if you feel like you need to refer them to the counseling center, you will go through Lisa. Mm-hmm. And Lisa can talk about that, about what would happen if somebody requested.
And I would also just say, I'm going to have to pop off in a sec, but also just say that I think, well, I don't know if I can speak for all of us, but definitely best practice from a counseling perspective is to try to get folks connected with someone local to them in terms of being able to do in person if that becomes available over the summer. So also I would just say that if a faculty is concerned about someone, it can also be a conversation between us and that student about what makes sense. You know, we can help get them connected more locally. And there will be like limited availability over the summer for certain cases and certain students. But yeah, there's that option and opportunity to have some dialogue and figure out how to best support that student getting connected with the resources that would be a good fit.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it could be at least one conversation they could have with someone. And, you know, the process of referral as well. I haven't heard from the therapy world at large about what they're seeing. Like, have they seen a drop off in their own client load? They may have, and therefore they're much more available than they ever were. You know, a lot of times people call and say, I can't see anybody for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. So yeah, that's another interesting point. Thanks Maui for saying that. But Lisa, what can you talk about that? Like when somebody calls?
Sure. If someone does call, and even if it's a student or a faculty member, I would connect them with someone to, you know, help them with either getting information about that referral that Maui mentioned, and actually even doing some work with them via like the telephone. And because a lot of times students don't know even where to begin, and we could help out even if insurance is involved, because we don't take insurance at the counseling center. So that's that part of that process we can help them with if they prefer to just stick with somebody local. But if it is a professor or faculty or staff member that has some concern, best thing to do is email me or contact the counseling center by phone. And I do listen to those voicemails, and we would, you know, respond accordingly to whatever the need is.
And we're all checking our emails like 20 times a day at least. And so Brian has ordered that for the counseling center staff. Do not, you know, turn off your phone. I need to be able to contact you. And Lisa will say so-and-so needs to be seen today. Could you please talk with her or whatever? But if they're brand new, initiating the so-called paperwork or data forms, that goes through her, and she's making that happen. We just so you know, and you can tell people, we don't do counseling through Zoom or FaceTime or anything like that. We actually do it through a medium called Doxy, which is a HIPAA compliant, whatever machine that we use guarantees confidentiality. So that is really important. So if people are like, what, I'm going to be talking about personal things on Zoom, and no, it's not that at all. And that's the only way we are safeguarding confidentiality as much as it is possible technology wise. So, yeah.
That second part of Dristi's question about what to anticipate. So that pops in my mind when you said that. So a discussion I had with a student who said, I didn't sign on for online education. I don't like this. I don't intend to enroll in the fall. We're in this same situation. And I hear that. And I've been able to empathize and say, I hear you. I know. So many of us aren't built that way. We don't like it. But what are you going to do? Because there are only so many grocery store jobs there. And, you know, there are thousands of college students who are back home, you know, in their towns all across the world. And there's only so much work that one can do. And so, you know, maybe I was speaking with a student who said they plan to enroll in the summer. And I was like, yeah, you know, maybe take the class that is a common core that you're not really that interested in, but you need to get the credit out of the way. And maybe the content will be a little easier to digest in that way, like just to be strategic about what you do choose to take. Because if there are those classes that you're like, oh, I really want to be in a classroom setting so I can engage in dialogue and ask questions, and then don't take that one if you can avoid it. But you know, we don't know how long we're going to be in this holding pattern. And so, you know, getting some credit, and like, so that you can, you know, at the end of the summer, look back and go, okay, yeah, I actually got some of the credits towards my degree that I needed. Or, you know, or if it goes into the fall, as opposed to, what did I do during that summer of COVID-19? Oh, all I really did was like lay around and watch YouTube and, you know, or play video games, or like get bored or get fat or whatever, you know, like all the things that we all, you know, are kind of doing. And so that's one of my urgencies about hoping that students will connect with us during the summer, is I want to continue to be engaged with them, because that's why I like my job, you know. So
I just kind of want to back up a little bit. I know that finals are coming up, and you know, typically people, students will form study groups, and maybe that's something that the faculty can encourage and see who wants to be part of a study group, maybe through Zoom. And that might, you know, give them that sense of being in a classroom. Oh, yes, I'm familiar with this person, or I'm not familiar with this person, but yeah, at least it gives them that sense of community of trying to connect with somebody who's also struggling with their finals in that class as well. So that could be something that the faculty might want to consider doing.
Thank you. So I was just wondering if you can, again, from your experience and expertise, kind of give us a first aid things to do. Okay, if this situation arises, this is what we should do. Email to Lisa is the first step. And then also I was just curious about how involved do faculty get in such situation in cases like this? Like, do they just tell the student? Do they get the student connected to Lisa and someone, maybe Susanna or Joe, someone from the counseling mm-hmm. center, and that's it? Or do they further continue to be part of the case? So how does this whole thing work for especially the new faculty who have probably may not have had students going to the counseling center?
So, you know, when it's in person, we always say, if you have a student in your office and is telling you some things that are indicating to you that they could really benefit from seeing a counselor, you would talk about the counseling center. You might open up your computer and show the website. You may then say, how about we walk over to the counseling center? I'll walk with you and you can get signed up. That's how we would do it if we were on campus, right? So that's been pretty easy. As far as ongoing communication between faculty and counseling center, that would only occur under consent for release of information. Once a person becomes a member of the counseling center, everything is confidential from that point, even though we know that you know that this person came to the counseling center because you walked over with them. But nevertheless, that's the way it works. So in the online situation, wow, this is interesting. So you hear things and you're kind of concerned. So the number one thing to call the counseling center about is if you hear any indication of suicidality, any kind of suicidal thoughts, any kind of wish to die or not to go on, things like that. That's when you really want to act. And so Joseph and Lisa, help me out with this because I'm just like thinking off the top of my head about how this is going to work. If we were to get a call about that, we would then, like if a professor were to call us and say, I have a mm-hmm. student I'm really concerned about, or forward an email to us about mm-hmm. what they've written, we would look at that and then we would do our very best to try to reach out to the student. If what we would want you to do is tell them to reach out to us and talk to us. But if that doesn't happen, we will reach out to them and we will check in with them. And what will happen is if it's worst case scenario and we need to get crisis involved, we'd have to find out where they are. We would get them connected with crisis, and that may involve them. This is not something we like to do, but it has happened, and it has happened successfully. Is we call the town police department and they do a wellness check on the student. They'll actually show up to the resident of the student and check in with them. Some towns are better at managing this than others. There's some towns that actually have on staff a social worker who goes with them for that purpose. So it's not just this uniformed mm-hmm. officer that looks scary to them at their doorstep.
Along this same line, Susanna, so for a faculty member or for Lori, if you're communicating with somebody, if you can gather as much information in a most natural way in conversation and jot it down, like, oh, are you staying at home with your folks? Because I've spoken with several students, somebody who's living in an apartment that's not their apartment, that is not on any record, that actually is just like apartment of a friend, somebody else who's actually living where they work, at long story, but yeah. So if you can gather as much information, you know, about, oh, where are you now? And, you know, are there other people who live there, you know, and document or at least jot it down. So mm-hmm. If they drop off, if they're like, if they get nervous or shut off, or just if you're making the call to us to say really concerned about the student, you have that. So yeah, in the most urgent situation, if we have to reach out, we know, oh, actually they're not at home in Cambridge, they are, you know, in Amherst living in this apartment, and, you know, as much description as we can get, because yeah, if the worst case scenario is we need those, as much of that information as we can.
You are not being presumptuous by asking questions. It is your right to ask questions. They gave you permission to do that by contacting you, and to remember that. I know a lot of faculty are try to be very kind of polite and respectful of privacy of students, and so they don't ask any more questions than they feel like is appropriate, whatever that is. But really, you have a right to ask those questions because they reached out, and by reaching out, they meant they were seeking assistance from you. And then when you talk with us about the student, I mean, we need to know the student's name. We need to know what circumstances. If there's an email, forward that to us. We actually had a faculty person who kind of expressed concern about a student, but refused to say what the name of the student was. And it's like, well, there's not like much that we can do in that kind of a situation. So that's really important. You know, I have even said to students, you know, when I've said I'm going to call the crisis team, and they're mad about that, and I said, I'd rather you be angry. I'd rather you be alive and be angry with me the next day. I'll take care of that. I'll deal with that. I can survive that. That's not going to bother me. What is really important is your personal safety. Any point, let's take off the suicidal risk thing and just have talk about students who are struggling. At any point, you can contact the counseling center, and there will be a therapist that will do a consultation with you. Over the summer, if you call, and Lisa will say, hi, so-and-so called. She really wants to talk to a counselor because she's concerned about a student who's been talking to her, you know, over Zoom or has been communicating by email. And Lisa will tell us. Lisa will tell us, and one of us will call that professor and say, okay, you know, I'm here. How can I help you? And so that's always available.
That initial call, if I'm answering that phone or I'm in with that, or if it's an email, I'm going to get as much information so that when I go to that person who happens to be on call or on duty at that time, I'm going to also add to this story. So, you know, I don't want people to be hesitant to be able to give me as much information as possible, because that helps the counselor out. With all of this information to have ahead of time.
Are there things not to do? This is what we can do, right? But are there, because, I mean, we're not the experts always, right? Are there things that you say, you should not do it this way? Do you have any words for the faculty?
Don't freak out.
I think that it's something where you have to listen to your gut. So don't not listen to your gut. You need to listen to your gut. Okay? So
another thing you need to realize, that, and we get trained this as in counseling, in our training programs, is clients for us, or students in this case, will try to protect us by not telling us things that they're afraid is going to distress us. So if they're afraid that they're going to distress and upset their professor, they're going to withhold information. And so you need to communicate in your own unique, authentic way that you're not going to be upset by what they tell you. And also to be very careful about how you ask questions and not say things like, well, you're not thinking about suicide, are you? Because that's communicating to that person that, oh, she doesn't want to hear anything about this, so I better not say anything. Those are some of the things to think about, is how to be very present and mindful in the moment. Don't let your head leap ahead. Stay and just listen to what they're saying. And if your gut tells you, ask this question. I am having a question about this. Go ahead and ask that, because your gut is important with that. You know, that comes out of a strong sense of empathy and connectedness and caring. And you really, I don't think, can go wrong responding from that place within.
Yeah. I was serious about don't freak out. If they're freaking out and you freak out with them and go, oh, you know, it's not going to help anything, you know. And I always assume everybody knows this, but then I encounter people who seem not to know it, but, you know, to de-escalate a situation, you know, to pull back, or, and don't minimalize it. Oh, you're probably, you're going to be fine. Or, or to, say things like, oh, you shouldn't feel that way.
Oh, you're a good person. I don't know why you would think these, because that's another judgment kind of thing. It's like, because if they're feeling bad and they're already feeling guilty for feeling bad, why, what do I have to be upset about? I have a home. I have parents who love me. I have friends who love me. I have plenty of food, money, whatever, but I still feel like crap. You know, to say that to them just will lead to them feeling guilty.
Yeah, I think acknowledging, maybe even saying back to them what they have just said to you, because then that's going to make them feel that you're understanding what they're saying, you're accepting what they're saying, and that, you know, even being open enough to say, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I don't like the way I feel about this information, and I'd like to contact the counseling center if that's okay with you, because it would be helpful to you. So I think letting them know what you'd like to do, acknowledging what they're saying to you, I think are some important things to consider when you're dealing with this.
One other thing I can think of is to, you know, be sensitive about it. But you know, one of the things I find myself handing back to them when I'm talking with students now is a lot of times people feel sort of isolated in their angst. To be able to say, yeah, you know, I kind of feel that way too right now. Like, boy, yeah, it does feel so limiting. Or yeah, I do wind up like eating everything in the house too. Or like, so that on one hand, you don't want to minimalize what they're saying, but you want to help people to feel a sense of community in their,
right,
in their crisis, that, yeah, a lot of us are feeling that way right now. You know, one of the really good things you can do is talk with a counselor. And we've got, you know, a nice thing here at the university is it's free. So, you know, if you need that resource, I'll be glad to do that for you. Like, so to help them see, yeah, I'm kind of feeling that stuff too. And my neighbor, my friend, my kid, whoever it is, boy, yeah, we're all going through this right now. And it's hard. You definitely don't minimize, but you know, and then as much normalizing of, like, a lot of people talk with counselors. I've talked with a counselor myself, you know, that kind of thing, to say, yeah, we have this really good resource. And I know they'd like to talk with you. What do you think? And I'd call in with you if you want, or see what we can do.
Thank you. I guess I have a question again, Joe. You said faculty should not freak out. So I know your clients, Susanna, Lisa, I mean, your clients are students, but do you have any tips for the faculty to keep their sanity, to not freak out? Like, how, I mean, we are also overwhelmed and we really want to help the students. So how do we not actually unload? Because I do that with my kids. Like, when I am in that situation, I think I sometimes may aggravate it with my own kids. Not my students. I'm very careful with my students because I can't see them, but I do take the liberty. So to do it with my kids, how do I keep my sane? Any tips that you can offer? I guess we are all human, so what works with the students will probably work with the faculty. How do we keep them and help?
So you know, you don't want to join them in their their distress. You want to join them in their sitting with them and in empathy. I mean, we can, you know, Drissy, what we can do is we can probably come up with a tip sheet if you want and give it to you, and you can, you know, disseminate it to faculty and staff if you'd like to do that.
I think the question I might have heard you asking is how do you guys self-care? And one of the things that I can think of, and I know we do in the counseling world, is to schedule vent time with your partner or with another professor, or even like a Zoom call like this with three or four, not more than six, so that each of you, like, because you, if this is what you're saying, this might not be what you're saying, but like to have a vent session, to compartmentalize it with your partner or with colleagues who can all share in that load so that you're not taking it and yelling at your kids, or you're not like, you know, inappropriately talking with a teenager or your student or something about like your own struggles. Is that what you were saying? I'm sorry if I didn't mean to cut you off, Susanna.
That's okay.
So I guess it's both of what you're saying. A tip sheet would be really great, how to care for us, ourselves, and our students mostly. That would be a awesome resource. And self-care, I think that's a good tip that would probably go in that tip sheet too. So yeah.
So Drissy, I mean, this is a question that comes up before in our profession all the time. Is that's why people who don't do this say, how can you do this? How can you just sit and listen to people talk about terrible things all day long as your job? And it's because as we've, you know, we have like Maui is a young colleague. We have young colleagues. And then we have old farts like myself who are going to be like 3 years away from retirement and then everything in between. And we learn about what our boundaries are. Professionally, emotionally, what in the context of our relationship with that person, that we are not their mother, we are not their priest, we know what we are not. So we define then who are we. And in the same way the counselors do that, therapists do that, I think that supervisors and paraprofessional staff and faculty are also kind of needing to define what the boundaries are, the limitations of that relationship. There's many things you can do within the boundaries of that, but there are things that you probably ought not to be doing. And we certainly, you know, at some point, maybe in the fall, we could have another meeting like this, and we can actually talk about this when everybody is getting all started. People who care a lot and who are very compassionate are also, they end up burning out. And what we don't want you to do is to burn out. We want you to be really the best teacher, faculty, professional that you can be. And burning out is not going to help anyone. There's actually a terminology called compassion fatigue. And we can certainly send you some information about that because that's a real condition. We talk about it with the RA staff on campus. We Res Life staff. We talk about it with all different groups of people because we do end up having what is called compassion fatigue in the midst of a crisis. Yep.
Hey guys, I've got to jump off. I've got a student at 1:00. I got to eat a sandwich real fast. But yeah, I hope you have a great weekend. And I just noticed the sun popped out here. So
yes, it did.
You are too.
Thanks, Joseph.
For joining.
Bye,
Joe. Thank you again. I just have one more small question, quick question, really. Can you just give us, like, so now I know about the virtual pet therapy, right? And the virtual relaxation sessions. Can you give us a little more information about those that faculty can, if needed, guide their students to, and what they can expect in the future as well?
So the virtual relaxation coaching, those are going to end when the semester ends because the individuals that provide those services are our outreach interns that have been trained to do this work. So they're done. They're going to be done. So those are really not necessarily available. Lisa, I don't know if there's any other form of that.
There isn't any other form, but you know, the students are so used to using apps, so that would be something that you could start gearing them to, is to find, you know, an app with regard to meditation. And we have some, I believe, listed on our website, and I'll check into that. But that would help students actually faculty, anybody can go on our website, right? So, you know, if that's even the case with that faculty, you know, are trying to figure out how can they take care of themselves. And you had mentioned this earlier, Drissy, you know, that's one thing to do is, you know, right, we've got to, you know, put on the mask ourselves first and then be able to help everybody else. So, you know, that self-care is super important. And even though it's going to end with the relaxation sessions, you know, the website is still there. And there's all kinds of self-care options that people can look into.
Yes. And the other thing too is this, Wednesday, we're doing an Instagram program called, it's part of the Reach Out program, where Joseph and myself are going to be talking. It's entitled Summer Now What, or What Now. And we're going to be Lisa will be involved and would be listing a lot of apps that have to do with self-care and things like that, or any other kind of resources that they can refer to them on their own. Wanted to say this to faculty. If any faculty person has ever thought about, you know, be participating in a mindfulness stress reduction program. So those programs were created at UMass Med Center. That's where it started in the US. These are techniques and traditions that are centuries old that other cultures have done. But, you know, we discover it now. So, and I spent $650 to participate in one of these. It's like an 8-week program. And I found out last year there is a free online mindfulness-based stress reduction program that follows the exact program that that I participated and spent all this money on. And I would really like to direct you for your own self-care to this program. And is there a chat function? I'm going to write down the.
Yeah, that'll be great if you can share that on the chat, or if you email that information so that I can pass it on to the faculty. This is next Wednesday, the 6th of May, are you talking about?
Yes. Shoot. And I think it's .com. I think it's .com, but it may be .org. I'm not sure. PalouseMindfulness.com. And it has all the handouts. You know, you don't get the direct kind of training, but it's amazing and it's free. So I would like to offer that as a possibility for people to learn mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is really about, it's about what you draw your attention to instead of fighting stress. It's about instead what you draw your attention to, and it's about mindful living versus living, thinking about, fretting about the future, ruminating about the past. It's about staying in the moment, in the present. And it seems like that is especially relevant right now to all of us. So, so of course you can go on you need an Instagram account, and go on and listen to us if you'd like. It's going to be directed specifically for students.
I'll post on here the Instagram so that people know what to look for. It's called Reach Out WSU. Okay. So if anybody wants to join that, it's going to be Wednesday. What time is that again, Suzanne? I'm sorry.
I think it's going to be at 11 because I have a 1 o'clock search meeting. So if that's okay.
Right.
And if you don't know what Instagram is like, you're just, it's not like Zoom. You're not participating live. You're just watching it live happening, and then you get to put stuff in the chat window. Mm-hmm. It's the preferred medium of choice for this generation. So
thank you. I will share this with the faculty, and yeah, I would really appreciate that tip sheet you were talking about on how we can help our students where.
Yeah.
That would be great. I think we're almost out of time. So do you have anything that you really want to send us home with? You know, is there anything like a final thought that we should really focus on, final thought that you'd like to say before we end the session?
I would like to just encourage people to go back to originally why they decided to do this work. Why did you decide to become a teacher? Why did you decide to become a professor? Why this group, age group versus K-12?
Mm-hmm.
Lori, why did you want to work in an academic library? Why did you want to work with serving students instead of grown-ups? You know, all of that sort of stuff. And reach down in there and from that well, draw what it was that you felt connected to. And what inspired you, and what, you know, what was the sense of community and connectedness that you had with that? And from that place, you can generate a real sense about how to be there for others, for the people that you work with, and to trust that that's there. that's within you. I think that's what I would want to say.
Lisa?
I would actually like to encourage people to think of the fact that we are going through troubled times, but we need to rise to the occasion. And we may not have taken care of ourselves in the past, but now's the time to do that. And mentally, physically, it's all important because it helps us get through these troubled times so much easier.
Thank you so much. That really rings so true. And I'll try to follow that information, but this is very informative. I'm sure the faculty will be, it'll be very helpful for the faculty. So thank you for joining us and speaking, Susanna and Lisa. So thank you, Laurie, for joining us too. So
thanks for asking us, Dristi.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone.